Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by...
Hello, hello. This is Moravi Garima, writer and director of the film Residue on Netflix now.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. I just checked it out on Netflix last night. Super cool that someone from our area has a movie up there. And congrats on the movie, first of all, man.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
How long has it been on Netflix now?
It dropped on September 17th. So about half a month.
Okay, cool. Have you had any, folks from around the area, friends and family that are just like, their minds boggled, jumping up and down excited when they see your name on their TV?
I mean, not only my name, but their names. Literally, like, everybody in the credits is from out here. Most of the people are from out and around here. So hella people have been like tagging me with just shots of the credits, like, oh, I didn't know I was gonna be in the credits, I'm on Netflix, stuff like that. So, it's been cool.
That's awesome. Hey, so before we get to the movie itself, where exactly did you grow up? Like, what city or what neighborhood?
I grew up in Washington, D.C., in Northeast, right off of North Capitol in Florida. So the whole Eckington area, which, of course, they're now trying to re-Christian, under the NoMa umbrella.
NoMa, like Soho, like right. Weha.
Right.
That's exactly. One of my favorite scenes in the movie, man. That's really because you have the camera over their shoulders of, these, bougie hipsters sitting on their balcony. But I like that you kind of put the camera behind them looking out over in there. Then they're sitting there talking like they know, like they've been there forever. I thought that was one of the most powerful things. There's so many things I could just praise you for. So.
Oh, man. Thank you.
But cool. Yeah. Tell our listeners, the basic, premise of Residue, the log line, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, so basically the film was about a young man named Jay who comes home after many years away, trying to write a script, to make a movie about his neighborhood, his childhood, and the folks he grew up with. But of course, once he gets there, the neighborhood has changed beyond his recognition, his own ability to recognize, and also the folks he grew up with, scattered left and right, and so he's trying to track them down and, kind of figure out his own place in this new, glittering city.
I love it. Clearly, I'm sure so much either autobiographical or semi-autobiographical. But I guess the main difference, right, is that in the movie, he's been gone for a little while, because some of the people he's missing and trying to reconnect with, he hadn't seen since childhood. But as for you, how did it compare to you? You only left for like a little bit, right? Like, was it to go off to USC? Is that the parallel?
Yeah. I left. I mean, the longest stretch I was gone was a full year. But I mean, even that was enough.
Yeah, explain sort of what you mean. Like, so you left and came back, and it was at that time when D.C. was changing just drastically in terms of, gentrification and especially all that stuff over by Nats Park. Like, the city's just changed entirely.
Yeah, I mean, so the process has been going on for a long time. But I think, even though I was aware of it before I left, it was the fact that I had gone – and I had not seen, I was the before and after, of change that had happened in 1 year was drastic. So like, when you're in the thick of it, you notice the changes, but it's just not all at once. But going away for a year and coming back, it was just like a time warp. I felt like I just dropped in from, into a city from the future, where of course, half of my storyline, half of my community, was not brought along. So the whole idea for Residue was trying to, go through, scavenge through the remainders of the neighborhood and the folks who are still, hanging on and try to document all that, put that all on paper, so to speak, To future-proof it in a way, To protect, not to protect, because there's nothing I can do for folks, but at least to get it all, committed to some type of archive before, the rest of the structure could be completed, And if you go back to the city now, if you go back to the places where we shot, the people who we filmed, a lot are not there. A lot of the places are not there, even in the midst of shooting, we shot over two summers, Imagine trying to you know, wrestle with continuity over two summers in a city like DC. You know what I mean?
Right, especially because a lot of the your shots actually capture the construction as it's going on. You know, you see the big dugout stuff, you see the people building on top bricks on top of the building. Like you're saying, is you kind of froze it in time a little bit, so it's documented. Right. That's the cool part about it, I think. So along those lines, you're trying to, you know, talk about how the city itself and the neighborhood itself sort of becomes a character in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, like a flailing, you know, you know, groaning, creaking, you know, angry character. You know what I mean? It's like capturing his demise on camera. It's crazy. It's really crazy. I think, it's two forces. You know that are characters: the city, and then kind of this invading kind of. You know, aura, you know, the construction, imagine the construction just being another character, you know, kind of this, you know, taking the city apart while it's still alive, you know, that's kind of how I imagine it.
Absolutely. Tell me, like, how, for any of our maybe other filmmakers around here or just cinephiles, what kind of camera did you guys shoot on, and like, how long did production take?
We shot, our primary camera was Arri Alexa, but it was important to just kind of, take that camera off of a pedestal in our own minds. And so, you know, we start the film off with, you know, footage from Nikon D500 and, you know, iPhone, like, you know, cell phone footage. You know, the whole driving across the country, that was me and my homie, Craig Beecham, you know, just driving from LA and just kind of filming the trip, not knowing how it would be used, but that's all cell phone footage. The Mochella footage is, DSLR, but there's a lot of 8mm footage in there. But the way we use it, you know, to this collage kind of, you know, effect, I think you learn early on that, like, you get used to it early on. So this jumping back and forth, you know, kind of playing with, you know, dirtying up the image and, you know, different resolution and frame rates and all that kind of stuff. It just, rather than tracking it, you just kind of take it as part of the experience, which I think was important for us to give us more freedom to use, you know, the things that we were capturing, because the Alexa is slow. You know what I mean? It's a slow camera, but the city's changing fast. And so we had to be ready to, you know, shoot things, you know, at a moment's notice. So the cell phone was many times are, you know, the only way we would, able to kind of keep up with the pace of the city. And so a lot of that stuff is on cell phones.
Gotcha. Yeah. I like what you're saying about how you wanted to take the camera off a pedestal, and you can sort of tell that a lot of the shots are like, you know, that sort of hand, I don't want to say shaky cam because it's easy to follow, but you know, that slightly handheld vibe, mm-hmm. it makes it feel, mm-hmm. It feels like you're living the life with the characters. So I think it's a smart choice.
Yeah. You know, like they say, don't punch in more than 10% on, like, you know, you know, beautiful, you know, in, you know, cinema camera, you know, like the Arri Alexa can withstand, you know, like 2K footage can withstand like a 10% push. But like we were pushing in like, you know, hella just to bring the grain out, to just kind of destroy kind of all that, you know, so we weren't just handling it with gloves, so that we could really just get in and do what we wanted with it, you know. And I think that's important for filmmakers, because a lot of times we become beholden to the equipment, you know what I mean, rather than the equipment being beholden to the story.
Sure, absolutely. And sort of along those lines, that's sort of the visual style, but in terms of the actual script and the narrative style, sort of explain to our listeners when they sit down to watch this, how would you call it? It's not necessarily plot driven. It's not a bunch of twists and turns. It's more of character driven. Explain why that was important. I mean, there are big story moments that happen, obviously. We're not going to spoil them here. Some very emotional beats that happen, but explain how, you know, it's more character driven, of this guy sort of floating through the residue of his memories and that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think it came out organically. I think, you know, for example, the camera, I mean, the whole point is that you're, you know, kind of experiencing the film as Jay, you know, but so it's like super close, as if the camera was on his shoulder, literally just kind of, and the sound design as well, everything comes together to give you an idea as to his kind of interiority, you know, is a big word for you. But, you know, I think that, like, because Jay is also a vehicle, you know what I mean, for, you know, who's trying to track down his community members, you know, to kind of memorialize them. He takes us through this community where we also meet these other characters. And so we're kind of taken along for a journey where we're, you know, very close in on him, but we also have these moments where we kind of are, you know, dragged along with him into, you know, the inner lives of these other people in a very intimate way.
For sure. Now, since we're experiencing it all through Jay, who's, let's, you know, obviously is sort of like a proxy for, you know, your own autobiographical kind of a stuff. How did you go about casting that role? And, you know, how pleased were you with the portrayal? Because he's obviously not playing exactly you, but, you know, pretty close. Right.
Yeah, I mean, Obina Nwachukwu, OB, who played Jay, you know, he's a super, super interesting brother. Like, he's quiet, but he's a chameleon, you know what I mean? I saw him watching me at times, you know, when I'm, like, directing other people and things like that. But at the same time, really fighting to, you know, invest the character with his own, you know, traits and, you know, kind of personality. And so I like to think of it as like blending wine. It got to the point where, you know, we would talk like, okay, he would ask me, well, you know, do you say something like this? Even if the conversation was never really about me, you know, knowing that it's about my life, he would kind of bring it to make it about me. He'd say, would you say something like this, or, you know, whatever, did this happen to you? And it would be an opportunity for me to be like, maybe, but like, what about you? Do you have anything similar or close, you know? And so we got to a point where we were kind of just, you know, how much of me, how much of you, you know, is going into this character. It was actually pretty dope. It's actually, now that I think about it, a really interesting process that I don't know a lot of, you know, films give you the opportunity to live out.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's a unique experience. And, you know, whatever films you make from here on out, that will always, I'm sure that connection, that'll be a unique experience, I feel like, no matter what else you wind up making.
Right. Every movie is about to be about me.
Exactly. Obi, we need you again.
Right, exactly.
How cool is it, man? So was this like your USC thesis film, or, you know, where?
No, yeah, USC, they thesis films are usually short films.
Okay.
That's kind of what they encourage. So for me, I didn't want to do that. You know, I graduated, you can take classes to satisfy your requirements.
Right.
So that's what I did. But in my second year, I started prepping this, knowing that I wouldn't do a thesis. Also because they own your film if you use their resources to make it.
Exactly.
So I was like, nah, ain't no way. And so also I just felt it would be a much more fruitful challenge to try and do a feature film. And my, you know, it's also important to tell you, my folks, both my parents are incredible, independent, Black independent filmmakers. And, you know, they, you know, for example, my dad graduated from UCLA. He had two feature films under his belt. He graduated one film in Cannes, it's Harvest 3000 Years, mm-hmm. and one film, Bush Mama, which was, you know, his thesis film, both features. And so for me, it was just like a personal challenge because I knew what was possible. And I was like, there's no way I'm about to just, you know, put $20,000 on a short film, you know, for my thesis. So,
well, it paid off. You know, you won what, audience award at Slam Dance, and I think Obi won an acting award at Slam Dance. So
it was a good
roll of the dice on that.
Yeah.
You sort of got to my next question about your parents. You know, who I think your mom is also a director, but, and then of course your dad, legendary Ethiopian director. Remind our listeners how both your parents have got the chops.
Well, my mother, Shirikiana Aina, and my father, Haile Gerima, you know, they, you know, let's see, they're basically, they come out of the so-called LA Rebellion generation of filmmakers who were Black filmmakers in LA, you know, particularly coming out of UCLA, because they had this program, which was, you know, bringing in Black folks. But they essentially were, you know, a whole, I guess, one or two, maybe three generations of Black filmmakers who were struggling, you know, really fighting tooth and nail to design ways to tell Black stories in an industry, in a film industry that was completely antagonistic to Black stories, and, you know, especially in the way that they were trying to tell them, you know, without filter, without, you know, white producers, nothing like that, telling them what to do. And so they really had to come up with ways to create, you know, high production value with low, with minimal resources. And so it's an incredible, you know, library of films came out of that era. The only problem is most of those films are like their thesis films, you know, their student projects that are being hailed, you know, now 20, 30 years late. And they're thesis films because they were never, you know, held up in that moment there to go do another, you know, there was no industry to back them, mm-hmm. no distributors, no producers, you know, no real, you know, kind of support to speak of. And so my parents, you know, they move on regardless. They've made many films since. One of the biggest ones is called Sankofa, came out in the 90s. And that's kind of when I was born. My earliest memory is kind of being in Jamaica filming that film, you know, being on set and stuff. Although I don't remember it clearly, I just putting the pieces back together now. So you can imagine kind of the world I grew up in, watching them fight, you know, across really the planet to like make, to bring these stories to fruition. So that's the type of, you know, do it by any means necessary kind of, you know, school of filmmaking that I come out of, and it's the only way that Residue was able to be made.
Oh yeah, and you know, not only growing up, obviously you're watching them, you know, on location, on set filming, and watching, you know, going through all their movies, growing up in a family of filmmakers. What other films are they, you know, maybe from other directors, not just your parents, but like, what are your parents sitting you down at a young age and saying, this is the, you know, obviously you're going to get your, you know, your whatever, your Orson Welles and blah, blah, blah. You could learn in film school, but like, what is like, maybe like the hidden films that your parents are like, no, you have to learn this.
Yeah. Let's see, man.
Like some of your biggest childhood inspirations, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
No, yeah, for sure. You know, okay. Yeah, so there was a film called My Life as a Dog that traumatized me as a kid, but, you know, stayed with me. There's a film, you know, of course, The 400 Blows. There's, you know, Bicycle Thieves. There's an incredible Japanese film called The Naked Island. You know, my dad put me on to that, like, yo, sit down and watch this. then there's the films of, let's see, you know, Usman Sembin, you know, the incredible Senegalese, you know, really father of African cinema. There's, you know, so like Black Girl and things like that. And then Cuban films were massive, you know, massively important for them, especially like post-revolutionary Cuban films. You know, there's one called Memories of Underdevelopment. There's another one called Lucia. There's Chilean filmmaker Miguel Litin. He had a film called The Jackal of Nahuel Toro. If you could find that one, it's hard to find, but it's incredible. And in fact, it was very critical, I think, for me. I saw it a year or two before we started making Residue, because it's just an incredible analysis of society and how it creates, you know, the worst, you know, elements of our societies, and worst meaning, you know, most violent and, you know, kind of destructive and self-destructive. And it's an incredible indictment on, you know, the system itself, especially in Chile. Man, China, Russia, there's a Russian film, a little more, you know, I guess from the 90s. It's called Burnt by the Sun. That one was next level. Of course, Kurosawa, Seven Samurai, as a young, you know, kid that was into video games and Japanese culture, Seven Samurai just kind of like, my brain almost exploded when I saw that one. Just seeing in black and white, but everything I could ever want in a film, you know what I mean?
Video game. You're like, what, Ken and Ryu Street Fighter? This is,
you know what I'm saying? I was like, yo, this was made when? You know what I mean? Yeah. But like, these are the types of films, unfortunately, which I think we, young folks are cut off from, because, you know, they're black and white and kind of have this old vibe. But I think once you get your film endurance up, you know what I mean, and can watch like older films, man, there's a whole world of cinema that's just like waiting to blow your mind, you know.
Oh, preach, man. That's what I'm talking about. I'm sitting here like taking mental notes with some of the ones you've mentioned that I haven't seen. So I'm all about it. But it's true. It's funny. You're mentioning like 400 Blows and, you know, Bicycle Thieves and stuff. Residue has that sort of vibe of, you know, Bicycle Thieves is like that neorealism thing, and that's exactly what this is.
So. Man, Bicycle Thieves is critical, man. Critical.
I love it. Yeah. So talk about, you know, maybe let's just say like in the end of the film where it all builds, and I don't like giving stuff away. So it all builds sort of a, let's say the main character has like a, it's been where it's a, a the gentrification has been wearing on him, wearing on him, wearing on him the whole movie, and finally it kind of boils over. Let's just say that, right? Mm-hmm. How everything is so politicized today that you could, you know, every time you say, you know, Black Lives Matter, you'll have other people going, oh, all lives matter. And, you know, what can we say, you know, black viewers will get what you're saying entirely. White allies like myself will get what you're saying entirely. Mm. How can we prepare those people that will hop on an IMDb and be like, oh, I'm giving it one star because it's a movie about gentrification, you know?
Right.
How can we, I guess my question is, how can we reach them and what would you say to them to prepare them for that main character's, you know, boiling over at the end? You know, like, break it down to them, to maybe a viewer like that. I guess cynical people would say, well, maybe they won't watch it. But I really, you know, we gotta try to reach out. So, like, why explain to them why
gentrification? Super interesting.
You know what
you
I mean?
Know, like, so I hear you. I hear you. But I'll say that, you know, that's not my job, you know, and I think that, like, I think anybody who needs convincing, you know, of my humanity, you know, anybody who needs to be convinced that, you know, I'm not subhuman or, you know, whatever, anybody who, you know, kind of needs convincing of these kind of very basic ideas. It's really beyond my ability to help, beyond my desire, you know what I'm saying, to engage.
Right.
I think that, you know, my best energy, is best spent, you know, talking to folks where we don't have to waste time on the basics, you know, where we can go on, you know, take it to a higher level, you know, in our own agreement and strengthen the terms of our own kind of relationships. You know, for me, like, you know, like you said, the film's about Black folks. I want Black folks to, you know, be engaged in an honest discussion, you know, about how I grew up, my experiences as a Black person in DC, and in any way that they might be able to relate to, you know, and kind of hold claim to. And to me, that's the best way I can be, you know, my most honest self. You know what I mean? And that's my number one priority is, you know, talking it out. And I think that, like, talking it out with Black people, you know, it's important for me to say. And I think that if other people happen to listen in on the conversation, you know, and gain something from it, you know, that's great. You know what I'm saying? And I think that, like, you know, if they're better for it, you know, I'm happy about that. But, you know, for me and my, you know, my, you know, kind of limited energy, you know, I try to be very smart and learn from other folks, you know what I mean, who kind of bang their heads against that wall. I want to be smart and spend it where it's best spent, you know what I mean, and let the rest fall where it will, you know.
Perfectly said. Before we run, then, how, you know, you shoot the film. How does it journey? What's the journey to getting to Netflix? Obviously it plays at Venice. Is it Ava DuVernay seeing it there and say, hey, we want to distribute it and get it to Netflix, or you know, how, you know, bridge that gap?
How did it
get picked up?
Man, Ava was on board. You know, they came to the Slam Dance premiere. They were in town. We invited them. They were, you know, cause Utah Slam Dance and Sundance are happening at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, hey, you know, we have this film, the screening, you know, come on by, you know, if you're available. And they came to our second screening, you know. They basically, I think, were really pleased by the film, but also, you know, particularly the audience's reaction, I think, kind of was important as well. And so, you know, we've been talking since then, you know, kind of that far back. And Venice was kind of a joint venture, you know, between us. But yeah, that's kind of how that whole thing kind of developed. And I couldn't think of a better place for the film to be. You know, if you look at Ava and kind of what they're doing, it's so kindred, you know, with, like, if you think about how our film, you know, made with very little, but, like, not waiting for anybody's permission, you know, green lighting ourselves at all times. That's literally what Ava and Array do. Like, that's their modus operandi, is like, we're not waiting for nobody, you know. And they're really trailblazers in the arena of Black film production and distribution. And really, it's new, they're breaking new ground, you know. This is all very new, and I reiterate that point all the time because I want people to understand that this is historic.
Absolutely, and it's historic and it's long overdue. Yeah, I mean, let's face it, Slam Dance is sort of, you mentioned it's going on at the same time with Sundance. It's Slam Dance is what Sundance used to be, really. You know, Sundance is good on them and everything. Sundance, it's great and all, but like it's basically all, you know, a platform for the already famous people to debut their stuff. But Slam Dance,
you know, really go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say it. I think I just wanted to commend Slam Dance for, you know, finding folks like you. It's the real indie people that give them a chance to pop. So,
and that's the other thing. It's like, once again, you know, we happen to just fall into another organization, which is just super kindred because they're in the same boat. You know what I mean? They tussling with a giant. And I think that like the fact that they've been able to do it while still retaining, you know, their kind of, you know, initial ideals, you know what I mean, of like really, you know, being artist centric, you know, being about the art, you know, rather than the other things which the industry kind of pushes on you, you know, it's what made them open to having a film like us. And so just like Array, you know, God bless them for being there and ready to kind of catch this film as it fell out of production, you know, out of post. And kind of, you know, championing it in the way that it did and still is. And in the same breath, thank Ava for also then at the next stage being ready to catch the film and pushing it up even higher. It's really a communal thing at all stages in the production, in the festival circuit, and now in distribution. It's just like a whole dope ass community just kind of making it happen.
For sure. All odds, yeah. All right, cool. Well, I guess sort of in closing, you know, what's next for you? You know, I know you're like, man, let me just enjoy Residue. But, you know, do you have any other ideas percolating? After having watched it, I'm fascinating to, you know, see what you're going to do next.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one thing is for certain that like DC is kind of the only, you know, perspective that like seems to be flowing out of my pen at this point in time, you know what I mean? Anytime I like sit to do something, it's like about DC and like that's, you know, with all these kind of, all the mythology, you know, one, the idea is also that people think of DC, they think of like, you know, politics, the president, all that stuff, not knowing that it's a black city, you know, named Chocolate City, you know what I mean? So like, there's so many untold stories within the city. So that's definitely, you know, an orbit, you know, which I find myself in. But also even more specific than that is my folks have so many films that they want to, you know, that, you know, so many scripts that I want to help them bring to, you know, to the screen, which is critical for me, you know, as I'm sure you know, you can get from kind of the way I've been talking. That's massive to me. But also, you know, we self-distribute still. And so bringing their films, you know, to the digital era and streaming them online is a massive, you know, project for me. So I got like all these things that I definitely want to do, and also enabling other filmmakers, you know, young black creators in DC, kind of holding the door open for them is another project that like I'm super invested in. So I definitely have a full plate of things that I want to get into. I'm excited to get into.
Yeah, man. Hey, that sounds perfect. Keep telling those DC stories. We need those DC filmmakers to get their stories out there. So you can lead the way.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, this was an absolute honor talking to you. I appreciate all the time and, you know, congrats on the movie success. Everyone check it out on Netflix. And
thank you.
Yeah, man. All the best. Really, seriously, rooting hard for you, man.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you, Jay. You know, I think that like this whole invitation that came out of nowhere really boosted my spirits, because I think that like it's really showing the film, you know, kind of percolate in DC specifically. You know what I mean? So WTOP is part of that as well. So I appreciate them. I appreciate you, Jason. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man, you boost my spirits too. I don't know what this is. We'll say. I'll cut the interview off. But just after that, man, I went to film school in DC too, so I know a ton of people. I was at American.
Oh, right on.
But an undergrad over in College Park. So like, I don't know. I've seen a ton of filmmakers down there that need their shot, you know what I mean? And so you inspire us too, you know?
Yeah, damn, thank you, man. Thank
you. I appreciate
it. Yeah, I say, you know, film school a lot of times is the thing that holds us back, because it kind of puts these ideas into our minds about how much money we need to make a movie, you know, industry standard, you know, practices and all that bullshit. Which kind
freaking
of just,
student loan debt too, man.
Oh, I'm telling you, you can throw this in there if you want, man. You know, when people ask me if film school was worth it, no, hell no. You know, I think I learned a lot, but at the same time, it wasn't worth no $250 something, you know, almost $250,000 of debt.
You know, that's the type from your parents.
I'm telling you, I surpassed any type of debt they've ever imagined. And that's the type of debt you don't pay in a lifetime. So to me, film school, you can learn a lot, but it's also a bit of a scam. You know, you just graduate into indentured servitude. And, you know, what? Who can create under those type of conditions, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually, you know, it's, and it's hard. You don't want to, you know, it's, you don't want to, like, you know, sound like a bad alumni or, you know, like bad mouth.
Man, whatever.
At the same time, you're just like, man, I don't know if it was worth it.
Listen, I'm going to be honest at all times. Like, I'm not about to be dishonest. You know, like, I learned a lot, but at the same time, I could have learned those same things. But the best film school I had was making a movie. Yeah. And I think that, like, the same could be for anybody, and it could have been done without $250,000. So, you know, I don't mind, you know, being straightforward about this. Like I said, you can use this if you want. Like, it's, I don't even feel I'm being a bad alumni. I think I'm being helpful to the students who are there now accumulating the same type of debt. $250,000 of debt is not okay by any stretch of the imagination. So,
and it's not like the old days where you had to go there because they had all the, you know, the actual film cameras. You can go out like you did with an iPhone and the DSLRs and stuff. Just make a movie, you know?
Right, right. And Ari was a donation. We didn't, if we didn't get it donated, we wouldn't have paid for it. We couldn't, have, you know what I mean? It would have been on a D500.
I'm with you. It's funny how many people that actually either I went to film school with or other people I talked to, it's almost all of them to a person are saying, well, you might not have to go.
I'm telling you, I don't think it's necessary. I really don't think film school is necessary in this day and age. Please put that in if you feel the need, if you feel like you can put it. I don't think film school is necessary in this day and age because we literally have the full wealth of, like, you know, what Western civilization, you know, or at least a lot of it, you know, on the internet. And I think if you kind of set aside time to learn these, you know, these kind of technical skills and then get on set, whether on your projects or other people's projects consistently, you can get to the point where you're ready to take on a feature film without going to film school. You know, the best people, they tell you about the network, oh, you got to go for the network. But like the people who are in my network, who I'm hitting up, are the people who I met on set, who I know are, you know, kind of have proven themselves on set to be good, you know, collaborators. That's not worth $250,000 either. You know, I think that, like, you get the knowledge, you learn some things, you go shoot some movies. You know, you do like 4 or 5 shorts, then you're ready for a feature, man. Just go for it. You know?
Yeah, go to the PG library, whatever. Check out all the classics and watch it. Study them on your own.
Yep.
And
watch these films.
That's all you need to do.
I'm telling you.
Get on set.
You know what we did, which I couldn't believe wasn't a thing in film school? My dad had me and a couple other folks every Sunday night. We get together at Sankofa and watch a movie and talk about it.
Yeah.
As simple as that. If we had time, we'll watch it again with no sound and just kind of talk about the shots, especially if the cinematography was, you know, high level. We did that. We, you know, we started with Polanski and just started with his first film and just kind of watched his trajectory as a filmmaker.
Yeah, and it's a shame, you know, what happened with his real life demons, because God, yeah. what a filmmaker, man.
I'm telling you, what a filmmaker.
Knife in the
what
water.
Yo, I'm telling you, knife. My dad, we were talking about that.
Of course, Rosemary was masterpiece. China.
Oh, come on.
I'm not going to find a better filmmaker, and I'm sitting there. And I can't really, and as a film critic, I can't really now point to it, or Woody Allen, or, you know, all these people seem tainted now, but it's like, I'm like, I want to say, like, please watch these early movies, because that is a film, Polanski is a filmmaker.
But, you know, to me, I'm still talking like that, you know, I'm still studying his films, because, you know, like, his films, technically and story-wise, man, you, come on. But, no, I think, Repulsion, get out of here, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So to me, I think that, like, that type, those types of things, you know, we didn't watch really any films, you know, in film school, in the production program. And I think that was a major loss, you know, kind of this old watching a film and breaking it down to its pieces, you know, from whether it's the sound or the cinematography or the editing and discussing these. You could do this with Kurosawa all day. Rashomon, I have screenshots from, like, start, you know, of every shot almost, you know, in the film, just watching it so closely. And, you know, I think that, like, you know, that's, I'm excited to do that for Seven Samurai. You know what I mean? Like, that's the type of, like, rigorous kind of thing that you can do on your own without film school. You really don't, but they sell it so well. Top number one, you know, top five film schools. They put a lot of money into that. You know, a lot of times you feel like they put more money into the school grounds, you know what I mean, than to the professors, you know. Actually, you know, I've been told a lot of professors at SC are really underpaid.
Yeah.
You know, they have more adjunct, you know, they invest in adjunct people who they don't have to pay,
right.
You know, which is bullshit.
Right.
To me, I'm not concerned about being a good alumni. I know the people, I shout them out, I lift them up, the people who've helped me. But I'm not gonna help the, you know, this billionaire institution, you know, kind of be, you know, like squeeze students even more.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, man. Well, I've kept enough of your time. I just love when I talk to, you know, like a kindred spirit. Knows what I'm talking about.
So. Yeah, man. Hell yeah. This is great. This is really, really uplifting. I appreciate you.
All right, cool, man. Well, thanks for inspiring, and we'll talk to you soon, right?
Yeah, we'll keep in touch. All right, buddy.
All right, see you, man.
See you.